Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a great start to your day. Boy, do we have a great show in store for you today. Boy, we are very excited about a loaded show, to be exact. Bob Costas at noon. We're excited about that. Ryan McGee at 11 o'clock. We'll talk to a Nashvillian coming up in about 15 minutes. And the hits just keep on coming. We'll actually go down to the ATL at 1 o'clock and learn a little bit more about that with Chris Domino. But Zach Curtis will join us in 15 minutes. But, guys, I got a few good men on right now. So if you guys could take this first segment, I'm going to watch this area of the
Ooh,
movie.
What channel?
It's on AMC.
Okay, let's tell Ryan Porth because he's never seen it. So he needs,
well,
he needs to see that movie.
I don't know what provider he has, but it's on AMC. And so I'm just going to leave it right here. Darren McFarland down here in Smyrna in Rutherford County. Willie Donick over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe over on the west side in Bellevue. And Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's one of those movies. It's a four question from the past. A movie you stumble upon that you're just not going to turn away until it's over. You're going to stay no matter where you landed. If it's the beginning, the middle, the end, you're going to stay to the end. And this is just one of them. It just happened to be on this channel because it was on last night or yesterday afternoon, I'm sorry. And I was watching a little bit of it yesterday. So that's why it was still on that channel.
Yeah, it's so good. Such a well done film.
It was, or it is good, and it was good last night as kind of the return to play SportsCenter special last night, who was hosted by Mike Greenberg, and it was an interesting watch last night. And of course, all eyes on Major League Baseball and their commissioner Rob Manfred.
Well, I know the owners are 100% committed to getting baseball back on the field. Unfortunately, I can't tell you that I'm 100% certain that's going to happen. I had been hopeful that once we got to common ground on the idea that we were going to pay the players full prorated salary, that we would get some cooperation in terms of proceeding under the agreement that we negotiated with the MLBPA on March 26th. Unfortunately, over the weekend, while Tony Clark was declaring his desire to get back to work, the union's top lawyer was out telling reporters, players, and eventually getting back to owners that as soon as we issued a schedule, as they requested, they intended to file a grievance claiming they were entitled to an additional $1 billion. Obviously, that sort of bad faith tactic makes it extremely difficult to move forward in these circumstances. It's just a disaster for our game. Absolutely no question about it. It shouldn't be happening. And it's important that we find a way to get past it and get the game back on the field for the benefit of our fans.
Would you describe your feelings as confident that there will still be a season?
I'm not confident, Mike. I think there's real risk. And as long as there's no dialogue, that real risk is going to continue.
MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred last night on a special edition of SportsCenter hosted by Mike Greenberg. And he went from 100% last week to not so sure this go around. And it, you know, the first thing that jumps out to me is, you know, what school did Rob Manfred go to? Why would you ever say I'm 100%? Unless a deal was done and you are announcing the ink has dried and you've got a deal in place and I'm here to announce that we're coming back and here's the dates. I'm 100% sure of it because here's what we've agreed upon. Why on earth would you ever come out and say that? Why wouldn't you just say, I feel good? I feel like we're going in the right direction. I'm encouraged. I mean, there's all kinds of words you can use. Well, but to say what he did last week, I mean, just I can't believe how dumb it makes him look as a commissioner to say 100% sure, and then 4 days later, 5 days later, I'm not so sure we're even going to have a season.
Well, you got to give Carl Ravitch some credit, though, because Carl Ravitch showed that he's a veteran journalist, and he baited him. He baited him into saying it, and he fell for it. So I hear what you're saying, and you're right, but good on Ravitch for going in on him and making him answer that question, and that's why he's in this situation. And it was also good that Roger Goodell was on last night because he could evaluate Rob Manfred as a DB because he was backpedaling. That's exactly what was happening. So I think you got to give a little credit to Ravi on setting Manfred up for that one.
But you're the leader. You're the commissioner. You represent the game from the very top. And it's just been embarrassing. And he's not the only one, right? But it starts at the top. You're the commissioner. As our friend Doug Matthews used to say, and he was passing along a saying from somebody that he got it from, so it's not a brand new saying, but the higher up you go on the totem pole, the harder the wind blows. I mean,
true.
It's unbelievable that you would say that at, you know, both interviews, really. You know, the fact that we're sitting here in the middle of June and he is saying, you know, hey, you know, I thought we might have a, why weren't these conversations going on in May? You've had so much time to figure this out as the leader. But, I mean, they are at square one, and it's getting worse by the day.
Are they even
getting
at square
further
one?
From playing? Yeah, you can't go farther back than square one.
What's further back than square one?
I feel like they're just in their houses. They're not even at the square.
It all stems from one thing. They made a, quote, agreement on March 26th, and they both have completely opposite viewpoints of what that agreement was. And they say these things, like he drops this bomb, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, right, who is supposed to be representing the game. But, I mean, we know for generations now that the owners really are the ones served first by the commissioner, right? So we know that anyway. But he throws this out there, like, hey, Tony Clark says for me to start the season. But all the while, their lawyer is saying this, this, and this, and this. Well, he acts like everybody is going to just jump on the side of the owners when he says that. Oh, wow, well, I don't blame the commissioner. And the same is true for the player side. When they throw out all these darts and knives and stuff and all these snipes that the owners are saying, they act like everybody's going to side with the players. And the bottom line is nobody cares. They just want to see you work together and make an agreement. And there's zero partnership. There's zero actual discussion on, hey, let's get through this. This is a tough time. You know, a lot of people lost their jobs. We're dealing with the virus. We got a lot of challenges for the next few years. Let's just come up with something. Let's both sacrifice a little bit and get through this year. Take advantage of what we can take advantage of. And then we'll figure out some of the real issues that we've got going at the end of the 2021 season. But they can't even do this. It's ridiculous.
Well, they did a good job on the special of each sport that they went through, whether it was a commissioner and a player. Major League Baseball, no different. They have the commissioner, and then they had the NL, the player rep. And so Tony Clark joined the show, and this is what he had to say. Oh, that's right. He didn't talk. He released a statement.
Right.
Nice job by Tony Clark and the PA. I mean, what an awful look that was. Oh. So you don't even come on the show. You have everybody, the who's who, at the top of every sport, except for you guys are the ones that have all the mess to clean up and the big, huge, dark cloud over your sport. And the public opinion is right now at an all-time low, and you are nowhere to be found, and you guys release a statement. What a joke.
And then they all tweet. They all tweet.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to hear the players.
Trevor Bauer, he's got plenty to tweet about.
When and where? Give me a break.
He's so smart. He's smarter than everybody else. I mean, that's what they're all trying to do on both sides, right? They're both trying to win over everybody in the country, right? Like we're somehow today, we're going to see some new information on this and say, you know what? I'm 100% now with the players. Or, oh, yeah, you know, I was thinking about it, and now I'm 100% with the owners. That's what they're trying to do. Instead of getting in there and having a discussion, right? Instead of trying to who's the smartest guy and this is the principle we're standing on, they are blind to all the things that are challenging right now. No perspective at all.
Yeah, I'll at least give – I'm not giving much credit to Rob Manfred these days, but I will at least give him credit for honoring a commitment and doing that special last night, knowing that he was walking in to the firing squad, essentially. And then the players are like, yeah, here you go. This is us joining the show. Here's a little piece of paper. That's our statement. Yeah, we
what
did.
What a joke. I mean, what a joke.
No, it's an awful
joke. But he took the side. He took the side of the owners. We've screwed this up.
When and where? Give me a break. I don't even know when and where. Give me a break.
I would have said, I'm the leader, and this is on me. I'm responsible for this. This is my fault. That's where I'd like to see it start.
Sure,
instead of all of a sudden he's trying to make it sound like, oh, you know, I've been trying everything I can, but, you know, and – he's clearly so much on the side of the owners, which is understandable to a degree. But
that's kind of his job.
That's his
job.
The buck
stops with him.
I mean, let's stop pretending like they don't work for the owners. They work for the owners. They're the mouthpiece for the owners. That's who pays their salary. And that's how it works. When people sign your checks, that's who you work for. And that's no different with a commissioner, especially when you get paid millions upon millions of dollars, and you're filthy rich because of the owners. That's who you answer to. So let's. I don't know why we keep acting like, you know, oh, well, we know he's talking for the. Yeah, well, that's who signs his check. It's no different in any sport. Commissioners are they're given their money from the owners. That's who they are, a mouthpiece for the owners. Yes, they represent the league, but they are paid by the owners. So I don't know why we keep acting like we're surprised that they have the owner's best interest at heart. That's how it works. It's never going to change. And it doesn't change for anybody out there listening, including us. When people sign your paychecks, that's where you tend to have your loyalties. That's how it works. True? Anybody
yeah,
got
absolutely.
A disagreement with that?
No.
No. Okay.
I still think part of your job as a commissioner is to represent the game. And I'm 100% in agreement with you, Darren, but you have to show some leadership for the game. You got to be diplomatic about how you go about this. You got to show some empathy for what's happening in the country.
No question. They just all around, are failing miserably.
Yes.
True. I'm not giving him any credit. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving him any credit.
Yeah.
He went on the show last night. That's about it.
Yep.
That's literally about it. That's for good for about 1%. That's still a failing grade. I mean, they have failed miserably. Like I said, you can't go 100% in and 4 or 5 days later say, I'm just not even sure there's going to be a season. No, you can't, as the commissioner, do that. It's ridiculous. It looks so incredibly bad, and everybody looks bad. That is the thing that is starting to go. There are really no more sides. I think it's just time for everybody to blame everybody involved.
Yes,
whether it's PA,
but that's what they don't do.
That's what they don't do.
The commissioner, the owners, everybody. Blame them all.
They're both trying to have a total victory, right? And it's impossible, especially because of the agreement they made, the quote, agreement they made March 26th. Well, who's responsible for that agreement? They are, right? You say, well, we made an agreement. Well, both sides have different interpretations of that agreement. You know whose fault that is? It's their fault because they're the ones that walked away from that table thinking that they had an agreement. It's a bad agreement. So they have to look themselves in the mirror, like we've all had to do, like we all are doing during these times, and say, you know what, where am I at fault here? Why did we have this agreement that we can't agree on? They don't do that. No, they just keep fighting, and they keep trying to prove to everybody that the other side is completely wrong. They're never going to get anywhere. They're not going to play now.
I agree.
This is the first day that I cannot believe I'm saying this. I think they may not play.
Willie, I came away last night feeling the same way, and it's truly the first time that I really felt, even though I've thrown it out there, I didn't really feel like it would get to that point. I knew there was a chance, but I didn't really. I thought in the end, cooler heads would prevail. Like after last night and seeing all that, and then the players, you know, when and where, it's like, whatever. Give me a break. I literally, that's the first time I'm like, I don't think they're playing this year. Like I now believe, I don't know. Well, I don't think there's a season.
You've been consistent though in saying that if you're the owners and you don't play this year, it's.
Oh, there's owners that are fine with it.
Because you don't think Rob loss.
By the way, you don't think Rob Manfred doesn't know that?
Of course, because it goes back
He's got owners in his ear telling him, hey, commish, I don't care. They can keep doing, saying whatever they want. I'm not caving. I'm not going to buckle to their demands. And I don't care if we don't play. I'll probably come out better.
Right, because they're going to operate at a loss. If they play this year, they're not going to make money. I mean, and so if you're an owner, why would you do that? I mean, you're just thinking, okay, we'll just chalk this one up this year, take this one off, and get back at it in 2021. I mean, yeah. I think there are plenty that think that way.
But what is going to be the fallout?
What does that do for the game?
Right. That's the thing.
That's what they're not thinking of. They're just in the now. They're not looking, you know, a year or two down the road and how this is going to affect them. Because, oh, by the way, there are other sports that do have their stuff together that are going to be playing. And one in particular that I think is going to benefit from this, that's going to start a tournament on July 8th, and they're going to get new fans because fans are going to be so ticked off and done with baseball. That's like, all right, I don't know much about MLS, but I'll watch.
It's going to be every day. There's going to be a ripple effect. If they don't believe that, then I got news for them. They better start believing it, because there's no way they come out of this clean. At this point, I don't care what happens. Like, they are digging themselves a hole that it doesn't matter what happens. Even if they come to an agreement, there is still going to be a ripple effect from this, because this has left a really, really bad taste for good reason in everybody's mouths who gives a crap about baseball. We'll come back. Zach Curtis is a new head baseball coach. We'll tell you where and what he's up to these days. We'll catch up with Zach Curtis on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. When he was a member of the Nashville Sounds last year, we enjoyed our conversation with left-handed pitcher Zach Curtis. He is now on the line with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I believe he's a lefty. I don't know if I just misspoke or not, but he is now on the line with us, played at MTSU, and he is now the new head baseball coach at Loretto High School. Zach, how you doing?
Guys, I'm doing great. I'm sitting on a golf course, so I can't complain. How y'all doing?
Yeah, thanks for rubbing that in our face as we sit here and work. It's a beautiful day outside, so how is your golf game?
It's not too bad. We just got done with 9. I'm only 2 over, so can't complain. I can get better though.
Are you playing down south of us? Where are you?
I'm in Rogersville, Alabama. So from Loretto, it's only about 30 minutes. My wife's grandmother lives down here. She's got a river house, so I come down here sometimes and golf and just have some away time and just me time.
Good for you.
Who's better, you or Robbie Stanley?
Oh God. I don't know what Robbie would say, but I would definitely say myself. Funny story, when we were in high school, we were at Shelby Park, and I thought I put the brake on and got the emergency brake around the hill, and I did not, and it started to go backwards. And Robbie, thinking that he's Superman, tried to stop the cart just barehanded, and it hit him, and he fell straight into the cart, and it kept rolling.
Oh. Yeah, that was.
So I always hold. I have a lot of funny stories about Robbie, but I hold that one dear to my heart.
That was not a good plan by him. I'm sure he's never tried that again.
I don't think he has.
Was this an easy decision? We know that you were kind of going back and forth, bouncing from the minors up to the big leagues, and kind of playing that game that a lot of guys have played throughout their career. Was this the right time? Was it an easy decision, hard decision? Kind of take us through that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it was an easy decision. I don't think anybody that loves the game, that has the opportunity to play it, is just great. It's not an easy decision to walk away. But was it the right decision? I think so. Was it the right time? I think so. And with everything that's happened this year, with the pandemic, what's going on in baseball right now, to me, everything kind of fell into place the way it was supposed to. And when this job opportunity came available, I had to. Having 2 kids, a wife, and having a family, I want to be a dad. I want to be a husband. So, and to have the opportunity to coach a group of kids, Grim like Loretto, with the success they've had lately and the success we're going to continue to have, I think it was a no-brainer for me to do this.
How does it make you feel knowing that, there's no minor league baseball this year? Who knows what it's going to look like, as you mentioned, We are going through a global pandemic. What the scene is going to look like moving forward, there's going to be probably lower levels of minor league baseball that are going to absolutely disappear. Here's a guy we're talking to and you that was cutting his teeth and trying to make an impression and get attention brought upon yourself by coming up through those systems. So what does it mean to you to know that probably some of those systems and places you've seen and played for may not exist anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking, to be honest. I mean, when it comes down to it, the way I think about it is not only are you taken away from opportunities to have players experience professional baseball and enjoy that and actually have the shot. If I didn't have the lower level systems, I wouldn't have got the recognition or the time to show my abilities and actually get my shot. I mean, so, but then also you think about the cities that it's going to affect. Some of these cities, and I've played in with low A and short season, baseball is all they have. Baseball is, I mean, the heart and soul of those communities. And when you take that away, it's just sad to think about have to go through to pick themselves back up and find something and look forward to when it comes April all the way through September. So it's definitely sad. It wasn't that way. I wish they'd make more teams. I think there's a lot of guys that go unseen because there's just not enough spots. And I think that's what makes minor league baseball so good is everybody's trying to work for a job. There's always someone trying to come for your spot, and even the big leaguers understand that. There's guys in the minor league system that are itching to get up there, and like I said, I was very fortunate to get called up from high A, so if you take away some of those teams, who knows what would have happened in my career. So it's definitely a sad time in baseball right now to have these teams kind of get taken away.
I believe you were at Hendersonville with Robbie. How did this whole opportunity at Loretto open up, and why was this the right place for you to start the next chapter in your life?
Yeah. So when I got released back last July, kind of looking for teams to pick up, and I knew there wasn't a lot of season left. Well, I always do lessons during the off season, and someone just approached me and just said, hey, what about subbing? You just kind of have to hang out at the high school. You can just hang out and be the substitute teacher. Doing it, I did it, but when I started doing it, I got to know the head coach a lot better. I knew him from living in Loretto for a while, but he just talked to me. He said, I don't think I have too much longer, and I told him, I said, listen, I said, if this is something you would consider, I said, I don't know how much longer I'll play, you never know, but I would definitely love to start coaching when I'm done. I can't just give up baseball. And he said, well, think about this. He said, if nothing comes this year and you decide to not play, he said, how about we try to get you on staff next year? You work under me for a year, retire, we'll see where we can go, and hopefully you can get the head coaching job. Well, fast forward to a month and a half ago, after the season ended and everything kind of happened, he just decided it was the best time for him to step away and next part of his life. And when it happened, he called me and just said, hey, I just want to let you know I'm retiring. And I'm going to – as the next Loretto, and I mean, it was to all of us really that he retired, but I was very honored that his first choice is to lead his program that he's built up to what it is now. So it was definitely an easy decision when they offered me the job, because it's a family oriented like community. They love their sports, they love their programs up and down, and the success they have, when people are successful, everybody's drawn to it. So I love success. I'm built around, so it was a very easy decision once I got offered the job.
We're talking to Zach Curtis, former major league pitcher, grew up here, Hendersonville High School, Middle Tennessee, is where he played college ball. Zach, he's now the head coach at Loretto High School. Zach, I was impressed. I do the broadcasts of the high school championship games each year, and sadly, of course, it couldn't happen this particular season. But I was so impressed with Loretto. We've known David Weathers for a long time. His son Ryan, of course, recently passed through there. He was such a dominant high school player, and now he is on into the minor leagues. But I was impressed that they came back the next year. They had another really good team, even if they didn't have Ryan. So that really shows in a small town how much they love baseball and how much they've really developed a program down there.
No, they definitely have. And David's a very big part of that. David actually is going to be one of my assistant coaches. He accepted to stay back on with me and help me through this transition and stuff like that. So to have a guy like him with that much experience helps a lot. I mean, what other high school program has a 22-year big leaguer World Series winner on staff that can just give them the to own the game and not just the tips and tricks to throw hard or do this? He gives them how to play baseball, how to think baseball, and they've built it from the ground up. I mean, this baseball community is huge, and they love it, and they rally behind it. But every year they produce, because the one thing these kids do and these young men do is they compete. They don't care who they're playing. They don't care if they're playing a 3A school of like Farragut out of Knoxville or they're playing Summertown or Crosstown rival. They're going to treat it as they expect to win every single game.
Zach, your perspective is interesting here because we've talked about your story before. You had to work hard to get to the major leagues, to earn the big league salary. And sometimes we probably don't think about it enough. You see the average Major League Baseball salary and it's X dollars and it looks really good. But there are a ton of players like yourself that work very hard, play for a few years, and never earn the huge dollars. But players like yourself make up a huge percentage of the league. So as you look at what's happening just from your perspective right now, it's got to be frustrating as somebody who loves the game that they can't get on the same page and at least get through this season with all the challenges.
No, it definitely is. It's one of those things. I understand the business, and that's the hard part for a lot of guys, especially when I first came up. I still was just naive to it and believed that it was just a game, and I treated it as that. But there's definitely a very big business side to it. I mean, making billions and billions of dollars as an entire league can get tricky sometimes. But I think for the sake of baseball and the sake of getting guys back on the field, the players want to play. I still talk to guys every other day that I've played with, and they're just itching to get back. Everybody's just ready to get going. From the minor leagues up to the big leagues, everybody just wants to play. And I believe that there should just be some common ground of get back to playing baseball. I mean, everybody's extremely lucky to be in the big leagues or just play professional baseball because they get to play a kid's game for a living, and they get to live out. I can't imagine how many people's dreams. I mean, shoot, I did it. But it's definitely frustrating to see the back and forth and that the players just want to play, and all they want is what is rightfully theirs, I think. And that's just my opinion. I guess I'm biased because I played, but if you play X amount of games, you should get X amount of salary based off of what you were going to earn per game, because they break it down that way even in your contract. So it's definitely frustrating to see that, but hopefully within the next week or so, the owners something figured out to where baseball can get back and everybody can have something to look forward to. I mean, shoot, when golf came back this past weekend, I couldn't imagine how many people just glued to the TV to watch a sporting event to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Zach Curtis is with us, the head coach at Laredo and a former big league pitcher as well. And just having this discussion, and we've had a lot of discussions about this over the last few weeks, Zach, of what's going on with baseball. The thing that really continues to stand out is just the distrust between the two sides. And I don't understand why that's something that can't be worked through. And I know that the players just want to play and the owners obviously have their part of it, but why do you think there is such a disconnect and how can they fix that?
I think it's kind of that thing where the owners, and you see it even in the minor leagues, that some guys are not, they're not players. I'm not Zach Curtis. I am player number, whatever number I am on their depth chart, and they see it that way. And so they're trying to pay the players possible, but make the most revenue that the owners can. So in a short season, like, it's just one of those things, if they could just find common ground to where they both make their money and both have baseball, because I think it's going to make it even worse if there's no baseball this year coming back to next year. Yeah, it's going to be anticipated. Everybody's going to be extremely hyped up about it. But players going a full year without, and just that spark and that adrenaline, when you get guys back next year, some guys might not have the resources or have the money to go to a training facility and train with the best people and have the best diet, nutrition, strength and stuff. So it might cause more damage next year than good if there's no season. So by having some type of season this year, it gets people's players ready for the following season. So if they could just find some common ground on the money revenue, then I think they can fix that. But I know money separates a lot of people, and it makes people think different ways than they should.
So with all that said, you're now coaching in the purest form of baseball as a high school baseball coach. And again, congratulations on that. What's something that maybe you're the most nervous about that, you know, as you're going to, that you're going to face as a head coach?
I think, I had my first team meeting yesterday. I told the guys, I said, guys, one of the first things I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you there's going to be a learning curve for me. I said, even though I played in the big leagues, I played minor league baseball, everything. I said, that does not mean that I'm going to be perfect when it comes to managing a game. And I think what I'm most nervous about is letting my team down by making the wrong decision. But in retrospect to that, that's why I have a great staff on hand. I have two guys. One's a 22-year big leaguer. One has coached in high school baseball for 30-plus years. So I'm definitely going to lean on them for advice, for wisdom. It's not a dictatorship. This is a team. We're a family, and I'm going to lean on every single person. But I'm definitely – instead of just watching the pitcher and the catcher, I'm having to understand shifts. I'm going to understand outfield shifts, what this guy did last at bat, and just having to really concentrate on every facet of the game for seven innings a night.
Last thing, Zach, give us your best big league story. What was your moment? What's something you always remember about being in the bigs?
Man, there's a lot. I mean, I definitely remember I have a couple funny ones. Not even a week into me getting called up, it's first road trip. On the third game in Miami, I come in and Cole Gillespie's up after I got one out, came back into the next inning, Cole Gillespie's up and I strike him out. Well, usually they throw the ball out. For some reason, I don't know why they didn't, but they didn't. They threw it back to me and I'm 23 years old, just got called up 4 or 5 days ago. And I'm like, I'm not going to stop this game and wave the ball down and say, hey, here, take this. Well, me, I said, okay, well, here, maybe I'll strike the next guy out and I can take it in with me. No, first pitch, next to bat, guy fouls it straight off into the stands. Never saw that ball again.
Well, Zach, I got to be honest, it's better than where I thought this was going. I thought you were going to say the first pitch to the next guy was a home run. So.
Oh, no. That would have capped off that experience. But JT Realmuto is up next, and he fouled the ball off. Well, I strike him out in the inning, and Chip Hale was just not yelling at our guys, but just getting on them that baseball, I should have had that. They should have thought about that. No one did. And he gave me the next ball, and I take it. And to make sure I didn't lose this one, I stuck in my back pocket, and I go into the locker room. Well, me not thinking about it, I just kind of get on my phone after I do my arm care and stuff, and I looked at my phone, and they showed a gif of that, a video of me striking out my first guy. Well, I retweeted it, not even thinking about it. And our PR guy, our HR guy, runs in and said, did you just tweet something? And I just kind of looked at him for a second, and this, like, little kid scared face, I was like, no, I did not. and he said, yes, you did. It's right here. And I had to unretweet it and put my phone down, and I never heard the end of it for about a week about me being – a week into my big league career from the older guys like Paul Goldschmidt, Zach Greinke, Brad Ziegler, they all just gave me heck for tweeting during one of my first big league games.
That's a great story. Hey, hit them straight today. Enjoy the weather. Don't be a stranger on our show, and best of luck at Loretto. We'll talk to you down the road.
I appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a great day.
All right, you too. That is Zach Curtis, former big leaguer, played at MTSU. What a great story. And is now the new head baseball coach at Loretto High School, and his assistant is one David Weathers. Speaking of David Weathers, we haven't talked to him in a long time either. Maybe we should catch up with him here in the very, very near future. My guess is he's probably got thoughts on what's going on with the sport he spent more than two decades playing. We will come back and continue on with our first hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. We thank Zach Curtis for joining us here in the first hour of the program. Nashvillian, former big league pitcher, now the head coach of the baseball program at Loretto High School. RockNashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee to support their mission of feeding hungry people, as well as other ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's RockNashville.com. Ryan McGee coming up at 11 o'clock. We always enjoy our conversations with him. Bob Costas at noon. So a loaded show here today. I don't know if you guys saw this, but it looks like Vanderbilt has announced its plan for the fall semester. They've got an incoming chancellor and an interim, they've currently got an interim chancellor and an incoming chancellor, and they've kind of laid out what Vanderbilt is planning on doing for the 2020-21 academic year. And it's a return to campus plan for the student athletes. And of course, the football team will be the first sport to return to campus. Football players will begin voluntary workouts in June with limited athletic staffs on site. SEC regulations permit voluntary workouts starting June 8th. Of course, that was 8 days ago. So I was going to say more than a week ago, in alignment with Vanderbilt's Phase 2 launch. Activities will ramp up throughout the summer, and on-site coaching and staffing will expand as allowed by the university guidelines. Preseason practice is expected to begin in early August. They've also talked about some COVID-19 testing and pre-participation physicals, some daily screening and symptoms being monitored, enhanced disinfecting protocols, locker rooms closed, virtual team meetings, face mask covering, and physical distancing protocols. So some of the, usual, I guess I should say, the usual suspects that we've grown accustomed to as things are coming back open, right? These are pretty much the guidelines that we see for the most part.
Yeah, pretty consistent.
And what you have to keep in mind, too, is, you have an entire university trying to get their protocol, their policy in place. And so the athletics, where we're focused on, is in the, you have to keep that in perspective based on everything that's going on. Every school is trying to work their way through this as best as possible. And you have these gigantic challenges for sure. Let's just, let's hope that we can get through this as smoothly as possible. And fingers crossed, we can, keep progressing from where we are right now as everybody's trying to move forward as best they can.
Talking about moving forward, NASCAR really moved forward with their announcement yesterday. Oh, by the way, I've been saying this for well over a decade, just like I said that they should, for over a decade, that the NFL draft should move around, and look how that's played out. I've been saying forever, screaming for NASCAR to get the All-Star event around the country and stop having it in Charlotte every year. Well, they've announced this year it's going to be in Bristol. And they are going to allow 30,000 fans. And you say 30,000? Well, yeah, but Bristol Motor Speedway holds over 150,000 people. So, 30,000 in a – what it actually holds, does it – is it up to – what is it capacity-wise for a race?
I believe it's closer to 100 than 150. But it does – 30,000 is going to be – minuscule compared to what it can hold. I'm trying to remember what they had for the football game.
Well, that was 160,000.
Yeah, something like that. I'm trying to pull up what it is. But because it's changed so much over the years, it's
way more than 100,000. I know it's not 100,000. It's definitely more than that. I thought it was 160,000 for a race.
You may be right. I'm trying to look that up. But anyway, I agree with you on moving the All-Star race.
It says capacity, 162,000.
Okay, there you go. 162. So I was wrong. 30,000 with 162. I think you're gonna have a lot of room. Everybody's gonna be able to spread out. But that's obviously the biggest number that we've heard. You know, since they started, they had 1,000 last weekend. They're gonna have 5,000 this weekend. Pocono won't allow fans because Pennsylvania has not given that okay as of yet. But and that was part of the reason why, because they had announced the All-Star race date of July 15th. And it was everybody was under the impression it would be at Charlotte again, but they're seeing an increase in numbers, and they had gotten the okay from Tennessee to have some fans, so they decided to move it around. And this is, you know, you have been saying that, and I've been on that that train as well of move it around. That was even an opportunity. I remember having a conversation with Jeff Burton a few years ago, and he said, that's how you get Nashville back on the schedule, is you move the All-Star race to tracks that don't have a cup race, that you fix up the fairgrounds and do the All-Star race at the fairgrounds, or go to Iowa or some of these other tracks that would be cool to have a race just to kind of see how it works. Well, once again, NASCAR is being forced to experiment, and I think it's going to be cool. I mean, a short track, under the lights, middle of the week, for the All-Star race, they released the cars are going to look different. They're going to have the numbers in a different spot, which people are up in arms about, which is kind of funny. But I think it's going to be really cool. So I hope that it's a trend and they keep moving it around. And I still haven't released the schedule for next year yet, so I would imagine that's something that's being discussed. But going to be cool to see how many fans, 30,000 fans, and what the turnout looks like.
I think it's going to be just like the NFL draft. I don't think they look back after this.
I think
they're going to go, gosh, why didn't we think of this before? And I will raise my hand and say, I've been telling you this for over a decade to do this. But hey, guess better late than never.
I don't think they look back.
Well, I'm just saying, I don't understand why these groups can't come up with these ideas. Like, how hard is it to really come up with that? It's not that difficult. You don't have to have a bunch of degrees hanging on the wall to figure out this stuff. To me, it's borderline common sense. I mean, why would you keep something in the same spot forever? I mean, how many times have you guys heard me? People that just think you just keep things the way they are, oh, just because that's how we've done it. Like, that's, you're a dinosaur. You understand you're going to get left behind. That's not how life works. I know it makes a lot of us uncomfortable, but things change. Our country is changing. Things are always going to change. It's never going to stay the same. So, I mean, just think outside the box a little. I don't even deserve a pat on the back. I don't deserve a praise. It's not that hard. It really isn't.
And I think we're seeing that now.
And I think they're going to just keep doing it because it makes sense. Do things differently. And yes, if Nashville is now going to be on the docket, I think we better be on the All-Star docket, right? The All-Star race.
That would be smart. But
yeah.
This is what I'm curious about, though, as an outsider. I haven't read all about this, but Chase, I thought I heard you say that, you know, maybe part of the motivation was that numbers of the virus are going up some in Charlotte. Is that right?
Yeah, that was something that was reported last night that kind of led into the decision. They were already looking at it. I mean, because NASCAR has been in that, well, you know, one positive of having the pause is they were going to have to rethink things. So they've been able to experiment with the midweek races, which have been a huge hit. And now they're experimenting and moving the All-Star race around. But that did go into the consideration.
Interesting. And I think also I'm really going to be looking forward to seeing how the template works, because I would think a lot of sports, especially outdoor stadiums, are going to try to get a visual now. They'll be able to see a visual of, well, you know, what does it look like with 30,000 people in there? Of course, it's a giant venue, so you figure you can space them out. But I think there's a lot of these venues. College football comes to mind, NFL comes to mind, of what's the right amount of people that we could safely have in there to have some atmosphere in the stand. It's not going to look great, right? We've all been to a sporting event in our stadium at Nissan Stadium where, you know, there's 10,000 people in there. It doesn't look like a great atmosphere, but it's better than zero, right? Yeah. At least from a financial standpoint. So there's probably going to be a lot of people. And this is something that baseball could have been researching and focusing on now, but they can't even get to that, right? Because I think it was reasonable to say, could you have a few fans in there, especially in the middle of the summer when it's outdoors and it's generally safer, less risk. I mean, there's a lot of questions that go with it, right? Because the numbers are going up, right? Now that we're out and we're doing stuff, the numbers are going up, and they're going to continue to go up. They're going up in our city, right? We still haven't been able to get to phase three because the numbers are going up. But, you know, there's a trade-off for that.
Well, if you're an NFL team or a college, I mean, you're certainly going to pay attention to this because Bristol's a bowl. So, it's shaped like a football stadium. It's had a football game played in it. And we know of that a few years ago, UT Virginia Tech. 30,000, I mean, that's about half capacity of Nissan Stadium. And so I definitely think you got to pay attention to it and see how it works and then make phone calls, talk to the people at Bristol. Okay, how'd you get people in and out? You know, how difficult was it? I think they're even I even read they're going to allow some tailgating too. So there's a lot that can be taken from this if you're another sport and you're paying attention going, all right, let's see what this looks like in the fall. And NASCAR is ahead of the curve, so to speak, and trying to see what happens. And look, they may realize that we're not ready to do this yet, but that's something that, you know, a lot of the drivers and people in the industry have been clamoring for. It's weird without the fans. So let's see. 30,000 in a venue that holds 160, I think you can pull that off.
But there should be how you do it, though. I have no. We're going to. Those fans are all going to walk out of there that day. Fine, right? And the next day, everybody's going to be thinking great. But the key will be, you know, what example do they set with masks and strict enforcement of the distancing? You know, like you use the example of tailgates, right? You have to space these people out if you're going to do it right. Right, and you're going to respect the virus, respect all what the health people are saying, right? And if they do a good job of that, then I think that will lead to more, right? Well, what's the next step? Okay, we pulled this off. This looks good. But you don't want to have the film the next day say, look at all these people. They weren't wearing masks and they were sitting together. You know, they weren't really enforcing the recommendations that we all think are really important at this time.
I guess the biggest...
To this point, don't you think, Chase, they've done a pretty good job to this point
yeah.
of executing the races with no fans, but they have paid attention to the masks and the spacing and all that stuff.
Sure, they have. And
but now 30,000 people, that's a lot of people you got to try to, you know, keep an eye on.
Yeah, and Steve O'Donnell, who, for those of you that don't know, Steve O'Donnell is an executive vice president with NASCAR. He's kind of the face. Steve Phelps is the president. But Steve O'Donnell is pretty much the guy that, you know, handles a lot of the questions and the competition. And so he's kind of the face and has done a really, really good job. And he was a part of this announcement yesterday. And so they're still working on a few particulars of how they're going to get people in and out. I was trying to pull up the exact tweet from Bob Pockrass, who's a longtime reporter, now with Fox Sports, was with the ESPN, but so this is what I was saying about Charlotte. North Carolina's COVID-19 numbers, especially in the Charlotte area, are going up, with Tennessee willing to allow 30,000 fans. The move was made of the All-Star race from Charlotte to Bristol. So that was why they decided to move it in there. But
they didn't actually do the right thing. They were kind of, their hand was forced.
It kind of felt that way.
Yeah.
But he also says, Steve O'Donnell says they have had very minimal instances of personnel. He didn't specify whether they were team or NASCAR or other workers turned away at races for showing COVID-19 symptoms. NASCAR isn't testing for COVID-19. It just does temperature checks. So they've only turned away. They've only had a few people turned away, you know, with it going on. But there have been no reports.
So what will they do with the fans? Will all the fans have to go through at least some kind of screening with temperature or something?
Oh, yeah, I would think so. They haven't released particulars on that, but I would think so. The one thing that I did see, though, is they're not requiring masks. They're encouraging masks. They're encouraging you to wear a mask, but they're not necessarily requiring it.
By the way, there's no problem with how they get there and how they do it, because the NFL didn't do it because they had a great idea. Remember, they were forced to as well. Remember, the venue was booked up, so they got mad because
yeah.
they couldn't get them to cancel the event for their draft, and so they just said, well, then the heck with you. I mean, they tried and they tried and they tried, and they said, well, we'll just go somewhere else.
Wasn't that something with the Rockettes?
I don't remember exactly what was scheduled, but you know, I guess it doesn't really matter how you get there as long as you get there, because it's not like they deserve credit. They were forced to do it, and they stumbled into something that should have been an obvious thing a long time ago, and now they'll never look back, and maybe that's going to be the case with NASCAR. Maybe because of what you just said about Charlotte, it has forced them to do this, and my guess is they'll never look back from this either. I think they'll probably just keep bouncing around and think, oh, this is a good idea. We should have done this before.
They're finally moving on from we've always done it this way. We've always had speed weeks at Charlotte. I mean, they always had a 4th of July weekend race at Daytona, and guess what? They looked at it as, it makes sense to start our season at Daytona and end our regular season at Daytona, so we're going to do that, and we're going to change it. I mean, this is the new guard. This is why Steve O'Donnell, Steve Phelps, you know, Mike Helton's still there, and Mike Helton has done a tremendous job, but having new voices, you know, I think have really helped help the sport. And also, I mean, just being blunt, Brian France not being in charge has been a good thing too.
Yep. We'll come back. Ryan McGee, speaking of that, he can speak on a lot of things, college football, NASCAR, and so much more from ESPN. We talk with Ryan next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.